Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this Saturday's edition of Taking Aim with David Hensley and a special guest host, Kent Mizegades, who I refer to as Moore County's William F. Buckley, a true intellectual and a true conservative. So say hi, Kent.
Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure and honor to be back.
Well, we're glad to have you here, Kent. You know, we were just speculating before the show, Steve Woodward, every summer he says he takes off for 2 weeks to go to the mountains. But, you know, we're not sure that's quite the truth because, odd things seem to happen when he's away.
That's so true. Just heard in the radio this morning, there's predictions that Stephen Colbert is going to be fired within 24 hours. He kind of stumbled over his lip again. And I wouldn't be surprised if Steve Woodward was behind that somehow.
Well, and a few days ago, you know, it came out about the treasonous acts of the, former President Obama and his team of traitors. So, I'm not so sure Steve's not on a secret mission.
I think you're right. I mean, and I believe you can get tips on what he's up to. I've noticed when you drive by his house and his unique signs, if you look at him in a mirror, read them backwards, there's some tips in there. Yeah, it's I won't divulge his secrets, but I've
hidden
noticed
signs,
some things. Hidden signs. Yeah, you got to read them backwards.
It's like playing a Beatles album
exactly backwards. Yeah, that's probably where he got the idea.
Yeah. So there you go. Hopefully we haven't blown the cover of one of perhaps our nation's finest conservative operatives. So we got a couple things on the agenda today. We're going to talk. We don't have a public enemy, number one. That's Steve's job to come up with that. And, of course, since he's not here, I just didn't think of it. So no public enemy, number one. I'm sure Steve's making a list, assuming he doesn't dispatch them all on his secret mission. So we're going to talk about a couple things today. We're going to talk about, our favorite, Ken and I's favorite topic of education. And before we talk about that, I think we'll let Kent talk about his history with education a bit. And then we're going to talk about energy policies in North Carolina and how it negatively affects both consumers and industries. So which one do you want to start off with, Kent?
Well, I think education, because, it's on people's minds, whether you have children or grandchildren of schooling age or you're a taxpayer and you're paying for it.
Before we start,
I'm sorry.
Everyone, Dave Hensley, school board, mm-hmm. Everyone knows my involvement in education, but Kent has been involved in school reform far longer than I have and far longer than most anyone else I know. So Kent, why don't you talk a bit about your history on school reform and all the great things that you've done?
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, our children started schooling. We lived in Minnesota. And I'd say the public schools were okay up there. They were still very young. It's a pretty liberal state, but it wasn't anything like it is today. We lived then in Germany for the second time. It's my wife's home. And our kids went to German schools. They were okay. Again, could have been better. We lived in a rural area. And the interesting thing about that was that our middle child was he's a quick learner, still is. And we suggested to the school that maybe he could be tested to skip a grade. Well, their answer was, in the history of our schools, nobody's ever skipped a grade. And we said, why not? Well, we just don't do that here. Well, long story short, he skipped a grade. So, we've never been shy about pushing the envelope if it's justified. Came back here, had the kids in Wake County Public Schools, in particular the Davis Drive schools, which they hung a big poster of Bill Clinton and Al Gore, so it just kind of shows you where they were leaning. And then the high school there, Apex High School, the old one. And, you know, it was, again, it was okay. It was okay, but lacking in a lot of areas. And then eventually kind of the craziness seeped in there about the time our youngest left. So reform, we tried a little bit with the PTA. We quickly learned that the PTA was really nothing more than an arm of the teacher association. And they really weren't interested in our opinions. We did have some success getting a fairly conservative majority elected to the Wake County Public School Board, but that quickly dissolved through infighting, which I suspect was partially intended, and that's how sometimes the establishment works anyway.
That sounds familiar. I think you mentioned to me earlier that you thought that the central office had intentionally caused the infighting among the conservative majority.
Yes, there was one female member on that board in particular that caused mayhem from pretty much from the start, and it was pretty obvious that she had completely different ambitions, also politically, and just trying to use the position. Talked one way, a bit like Renee Elmers, talked one way during a campaign and then acted completely different.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Yeah, I mean, that's divide and conquer, right? So, you know, about that point, we were starting to look at potentially starting a charter school. They were brand new at the time. Legislature just allowed them a couple of years earlier. And they quickly reached the initial cap of 100 schools.
Right.
That went really fast. About the time we wanted to open one, we learned that the cap had been hit, and talking with a good friend of mine, Bob Luddy, big industrialist in Raleigh, and he's a real major figure in education, and he had opened the Franklin Academy in Wake Forest, one of the very first, and still today one of the largest charter schools in the state, very successful, and he said, well, we've hit the cap. I don't want to do any more charter schools because I don't want the government getting in my way, basically.
Right,
he's
right.
A businessman. So he said, I'm going to do a private, low-cost, private equivalent, focused on academics, not athletics, not fluff, a classical school with all of the usual aspects that a classical school has, and run it like a business, very low cost standard buildings, no frills, but still focused on good learning. And he has achieved that. I mean, it's been a huge success. It's the largest private school network in this state by far. Expanded now also into South Carolina, Virginia, and Tennessee. They can't build the schools fast enough.
Right, right.
And we were involved. I was on the original board. I was director of development for a while. I took a hiatus from running engineering companies and proud to have played a small role, my wife and I. We actually helped start the Apex campuses.
Yeah, every community wants a Thales Academy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone. Just and real, just off, do you know offhand what their current tuition is?
It's I think elementary school is about $6,000 a year. Yeah. High school is about $7,000. It varies a little bit by campus, and that really hasn't changed all that much in the last decade.
Yeah. So this privately run private network of private schools that achieves great results. They teach Latin. Their
right.
students go on. They educate children at half the cost of Moore County schools. Moore County schools is about $13,500 per student.
Mm-hmm.
Thales Academy, that people are clamoring to get into, communities are fighting to bring to their town, educate children for half the cost
yes.
of Moore County schools. Isn't that amazing?
Yes. I mean, when you look at how it's done, having been involved in that, it's really not that difficult. And there are, of course, the naysayers, and there have been a lot of them, you know, will say, well, yes, but he's funding it. No, Bob doesn't fund it. From the outset, he said, these things have to have a positive cash flow within a couple of years and pay off the mortgage within 10 or 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
He does not take donations. He will not take donations.
Yep.
There's no fundraising for them.
Yep.
They have to survive solely on tuition. There are students there that are on the scholarships
like
or vouchers. The vouchers, but not many. But not that many. It really, and it was never designed to be dependent upon any kind of government support or vouchers.
Right. You know, and another quick point, and then about Thales, and then we can continue on. That's $6,000 per student. That's just not just the operating cost. Moore County spends $13,500 per student just for per year, just for operational. Plus, they do a $35 million bond issue to build the school.
Right.
So, Mr. Luddy and his network of efficiently run, effective schools. He charges $6,000 a year, which pays both the operational costs and retires the mortgage.
Correct.
So it's even it's even more than less than half the cost.
Correct.
Maybe it's 35% of the cost.
Yeah,
or
I think the last time I looked, it's about a third.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just what a remarkable model. Hopefully, we'll have one here soon.
We hope so. In fact, kind of a funny side note, we actually tried to purchase the old Southern Pines Elementary where Montessori is. We were the high bidder on that, and then the Montessori was allowed to put a second bid in, and they matched the Thales bid, and it was given to them. In a way, it was a good thing. Thales really operates best when they operate off their own floor plan.
Yes, and I remember that. I was there, and let me say this, and we can talk about it another time. One of the biggest mistakes that has been made since I've been on the school board was selling the former Southern Pines Elementary campus. I don't want to give into it today. We'll talk about it sometime, but that was one of the biggest mistakes that Moore County Schools has made since I've been on the school board. Very, very unfortunate we sold that campus. So anyway, so what do you want to talk about on education?
Yeah, I wanted to follow up a little bit there. I did talk about the latest, well, in fact, you mentioned it quite a bit, the trend towards, we use the term really, school freedom, not so much school choice. You know, the government schools seeing competition from others, they kind of glommed onto that. And so they say, oh, we have school choice too. You know, you can homeschool, but be in the classroom and do these hybrid things and but it's still ultimately the same teachers, the same rules from the state, same mediocre curricula. So I think in our world, it's people generally talk about school freedom, so free market solutions. Okay,
right.
There are
and competition,
Yep. And you know, some of the purists, and I would call Lee Borton's and Bob Luddy and myself. Even taking a voucher or a charter makes you dependent upon government funding. Okay, it's taxpayer funding, but the same government hand that gives it to you can take it away.
Lee's son, Robert, who, you know,
right,
Facebook,
Robert,
friends,
guy.
Twitter, you know, he makes that point all the time.
Yes.
You get a voucher and
yes.
you are beholden to the government.
It is true. I mean, it's just like any form of welfare, whether it's personal or corporate welfare. It, you know, it makes people dependent and, you know, honestly, it makes you kind of fat and lazy. In the end, and it's the same for a government, it's the same for a school. And you can see that there's been a trend. In fact, if you talk to Linda Lynn Kakadelis, who until recently, she was head of the state lobby for charter schools, and she told me about a year ago.
Lives down the street.
That's right.
From our station.
She's wonderful.
From my house.
Yeah.
It is actually amazing. I'm going to detour a minute.
Oh,
that's
please.
What I do best is derail people when they're talking. So
that's right.
It is absolutely remarkable how many people we have on the cutting edge and involved in education reform in Moore County.
True.
You know, we have the Linda Lynn Kakadelis. Mm-hmm. We have yourself who started, you know, Thales. We have the Bortons. And oddly enough, a lot of the stuff that, and maybe not coincidental, but all the stuff that came to bear later on, like, you know, the Panorama Survey, the Institute, I can't remember its name, up in Raleigh, who was funding all this crap. Most of that stuff was discovered by a group of parents in Moore County years before it made national headlines.
Really?
Moore County's actually been on the forefront of educational reform, and we actually have amazing people who I just mentioned who've been involved in that.
Well, I've wondered about that, and I think one of the reasons for that is this is a pretty nice place to live. You know, it's strong in faith groups and strong conservative / libertarian, classical liberal bent. And, you know, there's a lot of people like ourselves, we can kind of choose to where we want to live and run a business. So we choose to be here. And, but people don't, there are a lot of retirees that don't spend their retirement, you know, in a bar or on the golf course.
Chair, yeah.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, but you're right. And let me tell you, I'll tell you my anecdote about Linda Lynn. You'll enjoy this. She and I first met years ago when, at that time, there was, and we touched on her, Laura Evans, right? Our favorite consultant that, you know, likes to reassign students.
Yeah. Bussing for diversity.
Exactly.
Right?
So that was happening in around.
By the way, who did our? We're going to do a whole program on that. Moore County. That's who they brought down to do our last school reassignment plan. Mm-hmm. And I've got some pictures from that. And I've got some.
Good.
We're going to do a show on that. Moore County is still paying the price for bringing her down to do our school reassignment plan.
Wow.
You need to look no further than Pinehurst Elementary and Cranes Creek.
Wow. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that.
Yeah.
Well, up in Woke County, this was around 2007, 2008. Their program, they called it Bussing for Diversity.
Yep.
They got in trouble for that because they weren't allowed to do assignments based on skin color.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? They were sued, actually, and they lost. So what did they do? They changed it to the percentage of children in a school that qualified for free and reduced lunch and breakfast. And, okay, you know, no one was too surprised by that. But then we got to looking at it, some friends of mine, including David Bass, who's just a terrific investigative reporter for the Carolina Journal, homeschooled. And we said, wait a minute, these numbers don't match up. We were looking at the poverty levels in Wake County versus the number of kids that were qualified. And we said, these things just don't match up. Has anyone done an audit on their applications for free lunch and breakfast? Well, no. And we but somebody said, well, you need to contact Linda Lynn Kakadalis. She was the sole conservative member of the Charlotte Mecklenburg County.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yes, amazing that she'd done that. But when you meet her, you understand. So we contacted her and we said, hey, Linda Lynn, could you ask your board if they would do an audit of the Charlotte Mech schools to see, you know, is there any fraud involved? Said, oh, sure, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, I'm sure the school district jumped all
well,
over
Well, no, that.
That
was the amazing thing. At the time, they were only auditing 3%. And we said, well, we want a full audit.
Yeah.
She convinced the board to do that.
Wow, that's remarkable.
Amazing. So shortly thereafter, they got news out of Washington. And that program is run through the Federal Department of Agriculture.
USDA, right.
USDA, yep, right. Yep. And it was during the Bush administration, second administration.
Yep.
A ruling came down. They had changed the rules, just changed the rules. What do you know? That you may not audit more than
3%. Huh.
So there was no reason to audit them.
It's just like there happens to be a rule that you cannot ask a student whether they're an illegal alien. Isn't that odd?
It's insane.
Yeah,
it's
insane.
Yet the schools all know because that's where the money comes from.
Right, but they say they don't know.
They don't, yeah.
I mean, I fought that battle in Moore County. We couldn't possibly do
it. I remember.
And then, you know, here we are a year later wishing we had done it because guess what? The illegal aliens are getting the funding cut and they're leaving. And I recommended we do it so that we could plan for it.
Plan
and of course,
for it.
The central, you know, frequently the central offices way to deal with stuff, their strategy is to bury their head in the sand. But anyway, I digress.
Well, at any rate, but your point well made. We have some remarkable people here. And her husband, Pastor Tom, has also done some remarkable things in his state.
Yep.
We're just so grateful for both of them and their courage here. But as I touched on that, you know, I decided I want to look at some of the other counties, the breakdown of enrollment figures. And they actually, the big counties here, Wake, Durham, Meck, Guilford, New Hanover, and Buncombe, they're all running between, let's see, we're at percentage of children in public schools / government schools versus the total. And again, we're at 60, almost 68%. Wake County is 74%, so actually more in public schools. What surprised me was even lower than us is Buncombe County, 65%, but that's Asheville. So now Asheville's a pretty far left-leaning area.
I hadn't noticed. Newsflash.
Yeah, it's interesting history on why that is. It goes back to the Old South and who had the money. But at any rate, of course, Buncombe also is pretty strong conservative up there in the mountains. So a lot of people saying, not with my child.
Yep.
And they found alternatives. So
they vote with their feet.
They vote with their feet.
Yep.
Precisely.
And 32% of the parents in Moore County, 32% mm-hmm. of our students do not attend Moore County
That's
schools.
Right.
They homeschool, they attend mm-hmm. a private school, or they attend a charter school.
Right.
That is 32% of the children's parents have voted with their feet and paid taxes to support public schools.
Right.
And in spite of having paid their fair share to attend mm-hmm. public schools, they seek alternates Moore County
yeah.
schools.
Yeah. Now, those are loving parents.
Yes. The sacrifice they make
Huge.
Is remarkable.
Huge.
It should be
recognized.
Noted. Recognized.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You look also at the, if you look around at the percentage of kids in homeschools, in North Carolina's, if not the top, they're in the top one or two in terms of percentage of all school children that homeschool in this state, and that's thanks to things like classical conversations. And we also have a very strong homeschool legal defense organization because, you know, the left is always going after them with any means possible. And they're a pretty tenacious bunch, though.
Yeah, the pro-choice left is never interested in choice in education.
Yeah. And I've always said of all the alternatives to government schools, the ones that will survive will be the homeschools. And there's a simple reason for that. If you decide to attack the competition, like in Moore County, all right, there's three charter schools. Well, that's pretty easy, right? If you can get the legislature or the State Department of Education impose some onerous rules on these charter schools, that'll hurt them. That's three schools. Go up against homeschools. You're going up against, you know, potentially a million homeschool parents. Good luck with that.
Right.
They're tough, and they're used to it. Percentage-wise, homeschool is 13.3%. That's quite high. Buncombe County, interestingly, is 14.3%. And the vast majority, if you look at the statistics of homeschool, the vast majority of homeschools are Christian-based. Mm-hmm. So that shows you kind of the makeup of people that are seeking alternatives. I mean, these are solid families that are going to make the sacrifice. And, you know, an interesting side note of that, one of the other things I did in the past, and that's another story entirely, I served for 2 years on the board of directors of the Global Trans Park, which is an interesting, it's just a big money pit for the state, but it's because of my aviation background. And one of the things in Kinston, I mean, schools are horrible out there, just awful.
Right, right.
And we were trying to bring in businesses, aviation-related businesses, to a big airfield north of Kinston.
Right.
And the first thing that the potential customer, the CEO, asked, where are my top employees going to send their children to school? Because public schools was, for them, most executives, it's not even an option. They're not interested. And we would tell them, well, there's some pretty good private schools in New Bern. Mm-hmm, and that was like 45 minutes away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, so good schools are not, you know, not just for all of your citizens. If you're going to attract especially small businesses and entrepreneurs, these are pretty sharp people, and they pay attention to what their kids are being told.
Right.
And a lot of them nowadays, I mean, honestly, and even the teachers, public schools, no, that's not even an option. I mean, that's just reality. If you're in economic development, you don't have some good, really world-class schools, forget it.
Right. You're correct. I mean, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. It's not your fault. You're trying.
Oh well, yeah. Well, we could do hourly shows on Moore County schools.
So, yeah. The other thing about private schools, you know, private schools are open to anybody. I mentioned last week at Thales we had a group of soldiers. I think most of them were non-commissioned that pooled their money together and got a bus, a small bus.
That's remarkable. And they
bus their kids an hour every day.
Yep.
To make sure that they could get into a good school.
Well, if you're in Moore County schools, there's bus routes that take more than an hour and a half.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, to small child,
do
that?
If you live in West Southern Pines, right, because Busing for Diversity lady did this, if you are an African American student in West mm-hmm. Southern Pines, they bus you all the way to Cranes Creek,
wow.
and you spend more than an hour a day on a bus.
Wow. to a small child. That was, of course, a big argument. One of the big arguments.
Each way.
Yeah.
Each way.
Oh, yeah. Against this in Wake County is not only for that poor child, especially when they're young, be ripped away from their parents in their neighborhood. Right. And, you know, a child needs the safety of his own neighborhood. But those parents are not going to be involved with the school. They can't.
They cannot be because they can't. Coaches have to provide transportation to the students because the parents can't get the students up there because they don't have cars or their cars are broken down.
Right.
It's even worse than that. They broke up the cohort. The cohort that goes to Southern Pines Elementary, they split it up and they sent the predominantly black children up to Cranes Creek the non-black ones just go down the road to Southern Middle School. Anyway, we digress, but that's the kind of crap they do that they get away with because no one ever points it out. No one understands because no one points it out.
They won't. Well, and there's certain taboo topics, right? They won't even touch them. I mean, honestly, one of them was consolidation of schools in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked or rode a bike to school through high school. Our kids in Germany, they walk to school. Small, and that's the thing about Thales. Thales schools are small. They're built in neighborhoods. A lot of the kids walk or ride a bike to Thales. I mean, it's not rocket science. And besides, you know, kids get their wiggles out. They get some exercise. When they get to school, they're ready to learn. I mean, it was a big mistake to consolidate towards larger
schools. Now they don't even let you walk to school if you live two blocks away because they want to get their money.
The buses.
They want to get their money for their buses.
And yet go in front of any school, especially the elementary schools, and what do you see in the mornings and evening?
Pickup lines.
Long line of SUVs.
Well, it also contributes to the obesity of our of our children because if you're walking half a mile each way to and from school each day, there's where you're burning your calories. Anyway, I think we had an agenda to talk about.
Yeah, we
got there
yet.
So
this is great.
This is perfect. I look forward to many of these shows. We should do a more detailed podcast on some of these topics because they're important. No one ever hears this. No one ever hears the rest of the story.
That's true.
It's Paul Harvey.
Yep. Great man.
So we want to talk about energy or what you want
to... Before we touch on energy, I did want to also mention, and we touched on it last week, you know, there's a lot of alternatives now to schools. And, you know, even some of the public schools are reacting in a positive way. And again, a rising tide raises all ships. As the owner of a business, I wish I didn't have competitors, but I know they keep me sharp.
Competition improves everyone's performance,
sure
whether
does.
You're an athlete, whether you're a company, or whether you're a public school.
Right. And if the public schools want to survive, they need to embrace competition.
Right.
If they have the guts to do
it. Well, they have to get better, or they're going to be not relevant.
No, you can't nail a child to the seat. They're going to leave. And free markets provide alternatives.
They would try. If they could get away with it, they would.
That's right. Yeah. I did want to mention, of course, you know, the situation out there for post-secondary is even more bleak, and we all know all the craziness that's seeped into even what used to be considered conservative colleges and so-called, you know, Christian colleges. And, of course, the cost. I mean, just as a point there, my last year of undergraduate engineering studies at Auburn was about $650 tuition and fees for 1 year. $650. Right. That was it. A whole year of dorm room and a meal ticket was maybe $1,000. I worked my way through college, so I know what I paid.
When I went to the University of Oklahoma, taking 18 hours a semester, tuition was $809. This was in 1987, right? 1990.
Wow.
This was 35 years ago. Tuition was per semester in state, I think, $700 to $800
so
a semester.
Consistent with Alabama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look what it is now.
Yeah, and I did the numbers also to look at the inflation adjusted numbers today and what they charge at Auburn, which is known as a low cost, of course, state supported school. It's about three times the amount. And I know the quality of that degree has gone down because it changed from being a teaching college where the professors, a lot of them came out of industry. And now they're pointy-headed academes from, you know, other countries that have no real-world experience. So, and you got to take all these stupid fluff courses, even at Auburn. So, yeah, what do you do? I mean, what does a parent and a young person do if they don't want to be saddled with $100,000 in debt and they want, you know, education for a career that, frankly, they should have chosen around age 14 or 15? If you don't know where you're going by that age, because the rest of the world, that's what you do. Case in point, in Germany, there are different types of high schools. You have to know by the time you're going into high school what path you want to take, or you're not going to end up in the career you wanted to be. That's just reality.
So let me say something good about Moore County Schools. Moore County Schools is doing that. You know, they are starting in middle schools guidance counselors.
Good.
And, you know, VOTEC, college, you know, really forcing the students to think about it and put it good on the path before they get into
excellent
high school.
That's a positive improvement over when my kids were in. Because, yeah, of course, they were all just focused on, you know, four-year degrees in something.
And that's no longer true in Moore County.
Well, that's
you know,
great.
That was a huge disservice. We education, the educators in this country did a huge disservice to an entire generation mm-hmm. of students by saying everyone needs to go to a four-year college. Mm-hmm. And what happened is we ended up with a whole bunch of people with worthless degrees
mm-hmm.
and saddled. They're enslaved to the government by student debt, because here's what people don't know is when you and I went to college, student loans were done by banks, and they would like, okay, what are you going to major in? Mm-hmm.
Can you pay it back?
Women's studies? Right. No, you can't pay it back. Right. Engineer, you bet. We'll invest in that. During the Obama administration nationalized student loans. Mm. So they took them from banks and they made it so the federal government did them directly. But the other thing they did that people don't know is when they nationalized it, they made them non-dischargeable in bankruptcy. Mm. And they did that so these people are forever slaves to the government. And you see how they've used that for political purposes. Student loan forgiveness, Democrats, we'll forgive $1 trillion. The Obama administration and the leftists intentionally did that to enslave an entire generation of the federal government.
Terrible.
And people don't know that.
They don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't understand parents that allow their children to get in that kind of debt. You know,
$130,000 debt, and you have a major in mm-hmm. gender studies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, one has to criticize some of the employers. Certainly, you know, the government's always required a college degree, and I mean, they have an interest in keeping their universities full of people who are going to vote and donate Democrat. I mean, that's
reality. And the
government
will hire you regardless of how useless your college degree is.
I mean, even you would know this best. In the military, there are certain ranks you need, obviously a bachelor's, you need a master's degree. It doesn't really matter what it's in.
Right.
You can see at major bases overseas, there's like University of Maryland and others that are overseas.
Right.
We saw that in Darmstadt. You say, well, what did you get your degree in? Oh, you know, it was psychology or whatever.
Right.
Well, I needed it if I want to be a major.
Yeah.
So, and then major employers. I got a friend who flies airliners for United, and he had already flown corporate. He had been a mechanic in the Air Force, and he said, well, you know, to be able to fly United, they made me get a degree. So he went off and got a liberal arts degree in some fluff course.
So almost every single, like, if you want to fly for the Air Force, you have to have
a degree.
Aeronautical engineering degree, right? Almost every Marine Corps aviator has, like, a history degree or
exactly.
a political science
well,
degree.
The dirty secret with the Air Force guys, because I wanted to do that, but I didn't have the eyesight, the dirty secret is a lot of those guys that become pilots really also do history. Those that want to go on in the technical area, they got to have an aero degree.
Yeah.
Wow. So my buddy that he's been around here for years, Montgomery County, and so, you know, he just recently United dropped the requirement for a college degree because they realized this, it does nothing to prepare a person to be an airline pilot. He was really ticked off because it cost him time and money to do this.
So what are the alternatives that we have? I mean, what should we be doing?
Well, again, you know, I will admit my bias because I worked over there. My wife's from Germany. She apprenticed. Our boys apprenticed. You know, I'm a big believer in apprenticeships. In this country, when you hear that word, you think, okay, you know, somebody worked in the kitchen mm-hmm. for a year and became a chef. No. It's when you think about the best apprenticeships, and these are Switzerland, Germany, and Austria, they do the best. You're talking about this is the way that most people over there enter a career. We're talking 70-80% of all careers, even, you know, brain surgeons. You start through an apprenticeship. Typically, you start at age 16. It takes 3 to 4 years, depending on what you do. You're getting paid.
Yep.
You spend a day or two in a specialized school. I'm not going to say trade school because it depends on what it is. The rest of the week, you're an employee. You're working. You're making money for the company. You're around adults. Mm-hmm. This is how things are done over there. After that, you get your journeyman certificate. It's an old phrase. After 4 years, a lot. Then you choose the path. You can go. You can continue along in a technical path and get higher certificates. The best known one is something called a master craftsman. That's how you translate it here. And typically, those people then go on to open their own businesses or advance. And by then, they're already generally managers anyway. The other path is you might go the more business academic route and you get a 4-year degree or 5-year. Mm-hmm. In almost most cases, those degrees are going to be paid by your employer. Most of those apprentices, they're staying at their employer for life because they've grown up there. And that's what the employer. Think about the cost or the cost savings to employer. If, okay, he's got an upfront cost for the apprentice, although most of your good programs, they're netting positive income for their employer even when they're 16. I mean, these kids are doing good work. And they don't have to worry about churn of employees and having to retrain and look for it. They're going to be there, and they're typically your apprentice, a completed apprentice. They're going to go to the highest ranks. In fact, I've got two friends in this country, Americans, that both apprenticed for Robert Bosch, their facility down in South Carolina. Both of them are CEOs of companies now.
And they started out as apprentices.
They started out as an apprentice. Yeah. Well, and they both went over, they were sent over to Germany as part of this.
Yep.
They get a foundation that's both skills-based as well as intellectual-based. And, you know, at age 16, 17, they're spending most of their week around responsible adults. I mean, in industry, there's some of the stuff they're doing can be dangerous, so you learn to be responsible.
Right.
They're not doing stupid stuff out on the street.
Right, right. That's one of the things I was going to say. By starting this process when our young people are 16 mm-hmm. or they're young people, you know what it does? It forces maturity
Amen.
And responsibility.
That's right.
That in America, that's one of the things lacking in our young people. I mean, look at the number of people in their late 20s and early 30s that they're just not mature.
No.
Age 30, and they're still mm-hmm. just...
at home.
Right, and they're just mm-hmm. not mature.
Right. Yeah, I call them zombie blobs. There's a lot of them around. You know, generally people don't look very athletic. You know, they're hunchbacks because they're always looking at their cell phones. They're normally kind of pale because they're not outdoors very much. There's a lot of them around like that. These kids through these apprenticeships are just amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and you might say, well, okay, that's great for the Swiss. What about us? Well, fortunately, here in North Carolina, we have a lot of companies that are based in those countries, and they've imported and adapted their
that model.
Training model. You have to adapt it a bit. Around here, you need a car, right? You can't get anywhere without a car.
Yeah,
so generally, they start a little bit later here. But otherwise, they follow very closely, but hugely successful. The first one was called Apprenticeship 2000. It's in Charlotte. You can see it online. German, Swiss, Austrian, and now American companies. And they call it Apprenticeship 2000. They started in 1996. It takes you 4 years to get through. And they've served as a model for quite a few other partnerships. We were the second one up in Raleigh called North Carolina Triangle Apprenticeship Program, nctap.org. There's another great one just north of us in Asheboro called Apprenticeship Randolph. That's about 20 companies. They've got a great website. There's a smaller one in Sanford, Lee County, mm-hmm. that's a lot of focus on Caterpillar and a few other companies.
Yep.
There's several of them in Charlotte beyond Apprenticeship 2000. There's a good one in Greensboro called GAP, Guilford Apprenticeship Program. There's a good one in Hickory. And they all follow very closely this model. And if you don't have one in your area, we'll start one. I mean, I started one. I didn't earn a penny from it other than the satisfaction knowing that kids
in
are going to have...
In Wake County, you started
Wake County.
One.
We started
not here,
that.
Not
no,
here.
Wake County. Yeah. And it has to be the employers have to run it. They have to put skin in the game. They have right. to dedicate time to this. And it's, you know, to give you an idea about the dedication, when you take on an apprentice, you promise them, if we have a downturn and we have to lay off people, you will be the last person that gets laid off. And if that happens, we're going to find you another employer where you can continue your apprenticeship.
Yeah, within the network.
Right.
Yeah, because you know,
exactly.
you have
multiple
employees.
Exactly, you're in a
employees.
Network.
It's
That's
a,
right.
It's a
you help
a
each other.
Yeah.
And those programs now have been very well refined to match, you know, the unique situation here in the U.S. And we have a pretty good apprenticeship office. It's part of the community college program. It's called Apprenticeship North Carolina. And I know
it's
those people. It's in Raleigh.
Okay, so there's not one at Sand Hills here.
Or no.
There's one at...
No,
okay.
I mean, I'm sorry. I call it UNC Sand Hills.
No, that's a whole
it's,
other episode.
You know, they've got actually... The Palmer Center is not a bad place. They have a pretty good facility here to teach these things, but they know nothing about apprenticeship programs, and they do so little interaction with area manufacturing. And I sent you my list of 40, 50 yep. manufacturers in Moore County.
I know.
There's
a
lot around
I know
here.
Many, many successful entrepreneur tradesmen mm-hmm. who have taught at Sand Hills Community College, and some of them are still hanging on, but to a person, they've almost all been driven off because of ideology
exactly.
and the bureaucracy, intentionally driven out. And these are people who have successful companies and entire careers who want to teach our young people, but
yes.
Sand Hills Community College drives them out because they're not ideologically aligned.
Yes. Yeah, well, if you've come out of private industry, you're not going to put up with that nonsense.
Right, right.
Now, there are alternatives. There is a terrific private for-profit, education for-profit. Ooh, that's bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we want to
Which
run.
Means efficiency.
Yeah, we want to run our schools
results.
At a loss because that's
right.
really great.
Right.
Called AIM. They're a fellow by the name of Jerry Yagan. He started private schools for aircraft mechanics in Virginia Beach. They've expanded into nursing. Manufacturing and a couple other areas. They've got campuses now all over the Southeast. There's one near Monroe. And I've invited them to look at the Sand Hills as potentially another place. They're just growing by leaps and bounds. Because if you look at enrollment statistics for colleges, it's going down, especially young men.
Right.
They've figured this out. And you look at enrollment in places like the Lee County CCCC.
Yep.
Lee County's a little different. They always had a focus on industry and manufacturing in that community college, and they've stuck to that. So they work very closely with area industry.
Right, right.
Sand Hills has not.
Right.
I mean, that's just a fact. Sand Hills doesn't. Hopefully something might happen there. In fact, when we were doing NCTAP, we worked with Wake County, and fortunately a friend of mine, another pilot friend of mine, was in charge of all the technical training. He bent the ear of Dr. Scott, who was the head of the school, and he said, I'm going to retire in a few years. I'm going to bring this back into Wake Tech, and he did. And so it's because you need the cooperation of either a private technical school or the local community college. You've got to have that because – we ask for some things that are a little unusual.
Well, as far as Sand Hills Community College, thankfully, with the help of our county commissioners, we are slowly getting reformers on the board.
Yes.
But the legislature, two of the appointments now come from the legislature. Mm. One comes from the community college. I'm sorry, from the county commissioners. And our legislatures have not been putting reformers on the board.
Mm.
But anyway, so hopefully, reforms will be slow as board members get replaced. But
well,
we'll
think
see.
I agree. I think the trend is in the right direction. There's certainly a lot of manufacturers here in this region, far more than people can imagine. Most of them are small to mid-size.
Yep.
It's a good place to be because we're central compared, we're pretty much central to Charlotte, Greensboro, Raleigh. We've got good highways around here. It's a nice place to live. So there's a lot of us around here. I think quite a few of us would probably be interested in doing apprenticeships. But it has to be driven by the companies themselves. It's just not going to work. I mean,
you mean we don't need a government program?
Well, I think it'd be unfair to expect that of government, frankly. The manufacturers know what they need in terms of skills, right. And that changes. And it'd be a little unfair. And I, you know, I've got a bit of a bone to pick with a lot of small businesses or even large businesses. There is the attitude amongst a lot of them that, well, it's the government's responsibility, excuse me, to place, you know, Mr. Wright at my doorstep whenever I need someone. Well, no, it's not.
No, it's not. It's not a government.
It's your responsibility to do that. And that's how it's done in Switzerland, Germany, Austria. They have their own associations. They're called industrial chambers, and they fund that entirely. They fund the teachers. They fund the schools. And they're closely aligned with the needs of their members because the members pay money into it, and they expect something, you know, get something out of it in return. So, you know, the companies are whining about, we don't get the skilled workforce. Well, what are you doing to develop them? I mean, if you're doing nothing, well, then stop complaining.
Right. I can tell you this. When I first moved here, my companies, when I moved them down from Northern Virginia, you know, the economic development people, Sand Hills Community College will, you know, they'll stand up a program to train your people. And I called them a couple times and, you know, I forgot the particulars, but it just wasn't worth it. I mean, they weren't interested in supporting me. They were interested in how they could get a government grant, you know.
Figures.
But anyway, looking through your list of manufacturers, if I was a young man, I would be very interested in this program for Southern Pines Brewery. In fact, I wonder if I could do that now.
You can apprentice in that.
I wonder if I could apprentice now.
You can absolutely.
61 years old.
You can. In fact, if you want to do that, call my friend Mark Doble, who owns Aviator Brewery in Fuquay Varina. Now, he's former military. He's going to be tough on you.
Yeah.
But you can apprentice in anything. Anything.
Yeah, and you mentioned business. I assume everything.
Anything.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
We have a local star in that, Lucas Meacham, grew up at the end of a sandy road north of Carthage, and he loved to sing in church, and he loved to do karaoke as a teenager. Well, his choir teacher said, well, you should like develop this. So he did. He started going to different colleges, and all he would do is enroll in, you know, voice lessons and things like that under good professors. He is now an internationally acclaimed baritone.
Wow. I had no idea.
Lucas Meacham. Yeah, I heard the interview on WCPE, Classical Music Station, and he said, you know, the way to get into opera is you got to do an apprenticeship. Hmm. Yeah, local kid.
Yeah, I had
no idea. No, most people don't know it,
right.
And he's married to a Russian ballerina.
Well,
he's a great
now,
story.
You know?
I think he lives in Poland. In fact, it's just a good place for him to be.
Here's a big detour. Eastern Europe is absolutely remarkable. In fact, I'll tell an anecdote. When we had this horrible stabbing in Pinecrest,
yes.
where that student tried
Horrific.
To murder that girl. I was just finishing up a trip in Ukraine, and I was in Poland waiting to come back. And, you know, it jostled me. And I'll tell you why. If you've been to you've been to Eastern Europe, and
during
I was
the Cold War,
and you go to Poland, you go to Ukraine, you go to Czechoslovakia, and everywhere you see school children like in formation, you know, walking on field trips in uniforms. You see families out in walks in the city parks and on the cobblestone streets. And inevitably the nuclear family, the grandparents are there with them, right? So you go, I was in Eastern Europe just looking at this, and it's just like the United States in the 1950s, the people have values, you know, hardworking, intelligent, the nuclear family's intact, they have remarkable education systems. And I'm sitting there, other than an occasional, missile or, you know, if you're in Ukraine, just absolutely fairy tale like villages, people living those lives. And I get a message that this girl's been horribly, assaulted and almost murdered at Pinecrest High School. And it just shocked me back into reality.
It's shocking. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of problems in Europe, but I will say this, having lived there for a lot of years, you know, the small town life is still quite idyllic. And yes, multi-generational families support each other. And a kind of an interesting side note related to the apprenticeship, since apprenticeship programs are so ubiquitous over there, kids will do an apprenticeship in their town where their family might have lived for 10 generations.
Yep.
It's not unusual to find world-leading companies in some little map dot of a town there,
right?
Because they had that opportunity to get great training.
So,
and they said, well, I don't want to move anywhere, but since I know I can tap into all these other skilled people, I'm just going to stay here and build my business.
Let me tell you what I saw in Ukraine is, you know, incredibly well-educated people, mm-hmm. amazing work ethic, right? And, you know, because of war, they have to manufacture a bunch of stuff. They have
sure.
to manufacture small parts. They have to, you know, replacement parts. They have to, you know, manufacture munitions and stuff. And I've been in facilities in Ukraine where there are modern CNC, CNC machines,
right.
as far as the eye can
yep.
see, and they're all manned by
young men
between 19 yep. and 25,
and increasingly young ladies.
Yeah, they are
yep.
again, they are well trained, mm-hmm. obviously internships, you know, mm-hmm. apprentice programs.
Absolutely.
And the young people are running, mm-hmm. you know, and a problem in America is you can't get anyone to mm-hmm. go into machining now,
yeah.
you know.
They have,
it's all
yeah.
they're all dying out.
Yeah, and those kids will learn how to do that, and they'll start a hobby on the side, they'll YouTube it, and suddenly they've started their own company, and they're 25.
The quickest way for a person to become an entrepreneur and achieve wealth, in my opinion, is through the trades.
Mm-hmm.
Start out as an HVAC person, start out as a plumber,
machinist,
start out as
welder,
a machinist.
Yeah.
Learn your trade, you
automation.
Make good money, and then
yeah.
probably in your 30s,
mm-hmm.
you know, you go out on your own, you start
right.
your own company. I know so many successful people who've become very wealthy through the trades
yes.
and entrepreneurship.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And getting back to what we talked about earlier, we did an entire generation of young people a disservice by having them go to college, and that's why we don't have any tradesmen. It was the academia people who wanted to feed the academic industrial
that's
complex
right.
and all this money pouring into universities and this and that. And it was this incestuous relationship, and we're paying the price.
It's true. I mean,
and our young people pay
true.
The price.
They pay the price because now their parents, they don't know anything about those kind of careers either.
Right, right. So we need to educate people on that. Look at this. We didn't even get through our first topic.
It's all right. This was great.
We got the 2
minutes.
But
warning. It's a crucial topic. You know,
right.
we've thankfully, thanks to some terrific people in this county and elsewhere, there are a lot of alternatives now for K-12 that are affordable. And, you know, hope springs eternal. Competition hopefully will help our public schools. I'd like to believe they will.
I try to be optimistic.
You got
to
be. Yeah, I mean, most
of
them are pretty decent people trapped in a broken system.
You said that last week, and you're absolutely right. The, you know, and I don't want anyone to misunderstand this. We have, especially, you know, once you get, the further you get away from the flagpole, we have wonderful, wonderful
sure.
Members of the Moore County School team. But,
yes.
but you're right. They're just trapped in a mm-hmm. broken system.
Yeah, my mother was a public school home ec teacher. Loved it.
Yep.
Loved it. Taught kids skills.
I took home ec in high school, and I learned to make a pecan pie.
Wow.
To this day, I can still
make a
pecan pie.
As a challenge, all right? When Steve's back, we want to see pecan pie and
pecan
maybe
pie
something from your other business from Ukraine.
Oh, yes. We will bring. We'll have wine, vodka, and pecan pie
oh.
and see where
oh,
we
Oh, I'm getting hungry already.
So we need to do this. I mean, we're almost out of time here. We need to do this again because this topic of energy
yeah.
policies, it is the statistics that you have. Look, we all know that our utility bills have gone up, and you know why is it? But you know we can identify why,
yes,
and
we can
identify the path we're on, and
Amen.
Maybe we can do that next week if you're available.
Yeah, sure, glad to. It's equally crucial, especially for industry.
Yeah, no, it affects us, it affects our industry, and increasing price of energy affects the competitiveness of our industry.
Sure does.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Kent, and we will see everybody next week.